Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
She's the executive director, the executive editorial director of America's Test Kitchen. Her 20th anniversary on that television program is coming up this summer. You see her on the Cook's Country program as well. She is our favorite America's Test Kitchen host, Julia Collin Davidson. How are you, Julia?
Good. How are you, Phil?
I'm good. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, likewise.
All right, Thanksgiving is over. Many of us really kind of wanted to just fast forward to Christmas. So turkey is a traditional Thanksgiving dinner. So what about Christmas? Is it goose?
I don't do goose. I actually do a very strange Christmas meal. It is very German, and I grew up eating it. I'll describe it for you. It is, it's weird. I'm just going to tell you right off the bat, it's super weird for most people. It is called roulade. And it is beef. That's pounded thin. It's usually beef from the round or the chuck, pounded very thin. And then you roll up inside the beef. You put some mustard on there, and you put some raw onions, chopped raw onions. And then you put a slice of carrot, half a piece of bacon, and a pickle, a spear.
Whoa.
Still pickle spear. And you roll that up. And then you brown it and braise it. So, and it's delicious. The pickle and the bacon make the best gravy you've ever had. And we serve that with mashed potatoes and braised red cabbage. And that, to me, is Christmas.
That sounds
that's what I grew up with.
Awesome.
Yeah. My dad didn't. So this is my mother's side of the family. My father's side of the family, of course, is prime rib and Yorkshire pudding. So every few years we throw that in there. But most of us just love the roulade so much that we have to do it.
Got it. Now, prime rib is kind of like the other kind of traditional thing for Christmas, right?
Yeah, prime rib or tenderloin.
Right.
Either one. Prime rib is fun. I mean, it's a big old piece of meat. It's a standing rib roast, you know, it's big, it's impressive. If you buy it on the bone, especially, you know, it just looks impressive. But, and it's, you know, it's tasty. But I have a fondness for tenderloin, too. I know a lot of people don't like tenderloin because it's lean and blah, 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 but I love it. And I love it cold. I mean, that's the other thing, especially if you're having a smaller crowd. Having cold leftover beef tenderloin, that just makes the best sandwiches.
That sounds good, too. I'm getting so hungry right now. Unbelievable. So I watched, there's a thing on America's Test Kitchen about prime rib roast that the 10th, 11th, and 12th ribs are better. 6 through 9 are more fatty. Look at me doing my homework, huh?
Look at you. It has to do with the size of the meat, right? Because if you think about it, it's not a uniform, the rib roast in its entirety is not uniform. So when you get to that sort of that sweet spot of those ribs, it is, yeah, it's perfect. The other ribs are pretty tasty too.
Right.
And you have to wrap it on a pretty good relationship with your butcher to get those ribs, right?
Yeah.
So no shame in your game if you get ribs on with a lesser number. If you're going to do it right.
Right.
And the thing is also, this is a plan ahead game. This is not something you can throw in the oven at the last minute. You've got to take your time to salt it. Absolutely. Ahead of time. And if you have time to salt it for, you know, at least a day, up to a couple days,
right,
up to, you know, even 3 or 4 days, it's better. So what happens is the salt, you cover it with a good amount of good kosher salt. And so the salt, it pulls the juices out of the meat, right? And then those juices dissolve the salt, and then the juices get reabsorbed by the meat. So you're not only seasoning it, but those salts actually change the protein structure so that they'll hang on to more moisture while they cook. So you just get an incredibly flavorful and juicy roast.
Nice. Now, the segment that I watched dealt with aging meat, which gives you more flavor, and it's basically like a controlled rotting. Same type of thing that we just talked about. And a mutual friend of ours, Jim Foster, who says hi, by the way.
Hi.
He says baking soda and salt in the rub, that changes the pH balance. Is this true? Does he know what he's talking about? Because I know you
he
do.
He does know what he's talking about. You know what? Aged meat it's a whole different world. The one that we did years ago, 15 some years ago, was like a faux aged meat.
Okay.
And that works pretty well. But true aged meat is in a very highly temperature controlled, and you're changing you're changing the meat more dramatically than sort of our faux aged meat. Now, what the baking soda does, it's baking soda, right? Not baking powder. Am I losing my mind? No, it's baking soda.
Baking soda, yeah.
It changes the pH on the exterior of the meat so that it browns more readily.
Got it. Okay.
So, and in fact, I'm making tenderloin tonight for a dear friend who's her 50th birthday today. So I'm cooking her a fancy dinner. And in right before I put it in the oven, I am going to put a little baking soda. I just rub it on the outside. It just encourages browning.
Got it.
It's a good trick. You know, you can actually rub that into the skin of a chicken or a turkey, especially if you're doing any oven fried stuff where you really want to render the skin and get it brown. That's exactly what you do. Not too much. Too much, and you'll paste it, but just a little bit goes a long way.
Got it. See, I love talking to you because we get cool stuff like that. That's the first thing we learned tonight. Baking soda. That's awesome. All right. Some other questions.
No, go ahead. Yeah. And there's another thing about baking soda is if you are doing anything with ground meat, you're making a bolognese, you're making shepherd's pie, you're making a quick chili, take that ground meat, take like a tablespoon of water and like half a teaspoon, quarter teaspoon of baking soda, mix that together, sprinkle that over the meat and let it sit. You'll notice the meat change texture. And what it'll do is it'll encourage that meat to stay tender even though you're cooking it quickly. Because usually ground meat, you know, if you cook it for 20 minutes in a chili, it gets kind of hard. And then you have to cook it for a good hour or longer until those proteins break down and it gets tender again. But the baking soda totally skips over that. So you can cook something like a shepherd's pie filling for just 15, 20 minutes, and that meat will stay good and tender, and it'll brown again in the pan, so you get the fond. So, yeah.
So you put the baking soda on before you cook it?
Yeah.
Before, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Now, wait a second. So I told you what I'm having for Christmas. What do you do for Christmas or New Year's?
I like beef. I like to go with the tenderloin. We talked last time about my grill, my Weber.
That's right. You're a grill fanatic, but in the deep December, early January in Chicago.
Absolutely.
Do you have to shovel first? Like, what's the scenario here?
You do what it takes. If you have to shovel, you shovel. Absolutely. There's no question about it. Yeah, it's grilling season.
I have a really terrible idea for you.
Okay.
It's so terrible. I'm not recommending it. I'm just telling you.
Okay.
Absolutely do not endorse it, but I've seen it and I love it. That we used to have to grill. So in the test kitchen is in Boston. And it used to be in this little town of Brookline. And we used to grill out in the back alley by the dumpsters. And so we would have, you know, a number of grills set up. And we'd grill all year long, too. And one time, we used to have to shovel and salt and all that to put the grills out. One time there was a gentleman who was working on the side of the building, and it was in the middle of winter, and it was really icy, and he had to put a big ladder up against the side of the building. And do you know what he did? He took a container of lighter fluid, and he put it on the ground, and he lit the ice on fire. It went right to pavement, and he had a solid place to put his ladder. I've never done it. I don't recommend it, but I'm dying to see someone do that again.
Wow.
Yeah, right? That's hardcore.
I'll follow up next time we talk, okay?
Yeah, do not recommend. Do not try this at home.
Don't do it. Some things to do and things not to do with Julia. Yeah. I want to talk more about Christmas do's and don'ts, okay?
All right.
Yeah, don't set stuff on fire. That might not be good to do. We're going to hear more from Julia after this update from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN. 11:35, Phil Minicky in for Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking with Julia Collin Davidson. She's from America's Test Kitchen about your Christmas Day. I got a real simple one for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've had some brilliant fruitcakes, especially, flown in from the islands because it's a special treat. It's just not my thing.
No, I agree.
It's not my thing. And I appreciate the few people who love it. Like, I want them to eat all of it. For me,
it's love or hate, right? There's no.
I think it is.
You can't dabble. You can't stick your toe in the pool with fruitcake. You got to dive right in.
I don't like fruit and cakes. Period. Pretty much. Maybe on top of a cake, like fresh fruit on a cake, fruit in cakes is not my thing.
I'm with you. Yeah. I think this is an easier question. Eggnog.
Yes. Wait. So I'm new to eggnog, right? I did not grow up having eggnog. The one or two times I've had it, someone I think had bought the dumb carton from the supermarket, and I was like, this is disgusting. And then Bridget, who is my co-host on America's Test Kitchen, we actually did an episode that where she made me proper eggnog, and that is delicious.
It's good,
the
right?
The real stuff. Yeah. So I used to be a no, but now if it's homemade, then absolutely. But if you don't have time to make it yourself, you know, that's what Bailey's is for.
There you go. And with eggnog, do you put brandy in it? Is it brandy that you like in it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Just want to make sure. Checking off another box. There you go.
Another little nutmeg on top. Oh, it's good stuff.
Nice.
It's pretty rich, too. It's kind of like, it's like a dessert drink.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to be honest with you. The whole eggnog thing, like the last two or three or four. Or five Christmases, you go to the store and you buy the store-bought stuff and it's in the fridge. And then I just haven't done it.
Don't buy that stuff.
I know.
Just don't go there.
I know.
Just don't even be tempted. You know, I have a similar thing when I go to the store and I always buy, and then it winds up getting kind of mashed and whatever, is around the holidays, they put out those little butter sculptures that you can buy.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Like turkey ones for Thanksgiving, and there's logs and trees for Christmas. I love those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, they don't really get used all that much because you kind of want to mess it up.
Yeah. It's kind of like the canned cranberry, right?
Oh, my gosh. This is a huge divide in my house. Don't even. My
really?
Husband loves the canned stuff. And, in fact, it is every year he tries to take it out of the can so it stays in the can shape and stands up on the plate. Like, that's a good Thanksgiving for him. And I just don't like the stuff. I like the real stuff. I have to make it. Big divide. And don't even talk about gravy. My mother is full-on cornstarch thickened gravy, and I'm full-on roux gravy. And every year, we debate the pros and cons.
Wow.
Yeah. What else are you going to do on Thanksgiving?
Right. Exactly. You can't talk.
We don't watch football, so that's our... What else are you going to do?
And you don't want to talk politics either, so there you go.
Nope.
All right, let's move on to gadgets. You schooled me on the definition of a gadget last time.
No,
I'm like,
true. Well, I've sat through a lot of editorial arguments about the difference between a piece of equipment and a gadget.
Yeah.
So there's a price limit, you know, and there's a size.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
It has to be inexpensive. So.
And actually, I just saw this, I think it was on TV the other day, a garlic thing that's, I don't know how to explain it, but you rock it back and forth and it crushes the garlic. That's a gadget.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it crush it or does it peel it?
No, it crushes it. It's like a, I don't know, it's not a round thing, but it's somewhat round. It's got a handle on the top and then like a grater type thing. And you just put it on like a cutting board or whatever, the garlic, and then you rock this thing back and forth and it grates the garlic. It crushes the garlic. So.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's lame.
All right. Well, check this one out too. This one.
There's so many garlic gadgets. It's nuts. It's like the simplest piece of food. It's not hard. Garlic's not hard. You don't need all that stuff for garlic.
So how do you do garlic then?
First of all, I buy pre-peeled cloves because sometimes if the garlic's really fresh and gorgeous, I'll buy a fresh bulb. But, you know, throughout most of the year, I live in outside of Austin. You know, it's not like I live in Gilroy where I have fresh garlic everywhere. I buy the pre-peeled bags and I throw them in the freezer. Because you can't use all that garlic by the time it gets moldy. So you throw it in the freezer, and then you've pre-peeled frozen cloves, and then you take out as many as you need. You let them thaw like 30 seconds to a minute, and they go right through a garlic press, or I use a microplane zester or a rasp-style zester. And it just makes it very easy, or you can even slice it thin if that's what you're doing from frozen. So you always have peeled garlic around, and you can kind of prep it how you want.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Another one that I saw that qualifies as a gadget, A, because it's $5.99.
Okay.
And B, it's real, real small. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correct. It's a Vatheska. It's a metal finger guard when you're like cutting veggies and stuff.
Interesting. Okay. I've seen plastic versions of that for kids.
Yeah.
And in fact, my daughter had one when we were teaching her how to use a knife.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a three-fingered ring that's a shield, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So,
does that seem appealing to you?
You know, I don't know. I think I could use that because I'm always wary about, you know, cutting fingers and stuff. We talked about the Widowmaker last time with the, right?
But how often do you really cut yourself?
Not that often. I've learned.
Yeah.
And I've gotten much more cautious, so.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I think I don't have an opinion on. I would never use it. I don't need it. I probably would, like I said, my daughter, when we were teaching her, it made her feel more comfortable. And so if it makes you feel more comfortable, it means you'll pull out your knife and cut more stuff, then yeah, go
well,
for it.
Well, your knife skills are at a different level than everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. If it gets you, you know what, if it gets you in the kitchen cooking because it takes some fear or some hesitation out of you doing it, then absolutely, it is a good gadget for you.
I like that. Another one that I saw is the flip fork. It's the ultimate 5-in-1 barbecue tool.
Is it like the pigtail flipper?
There's a spatula, there's a knife, there's a meat tenderizer, a bottle opener, a fork. It's all on one thing. $24.99, buy two, get one free.
Yeah. About that.
Right?
That seems like it would wind up in my basement, man. Yes, I just don't know.
Well, how about you? What kind of gadgets do you like for Christmas? With cooking
oil. Oh, knife sharpeners. People, sharpening knives is hard if you're using a whetstone or an oilstone or a dry stone. It just takes a lot of practice. And people try to use the steel, but the steel doesn't sharpen a knife. It hones an already sharp blade, but it won't sharpen it. So there's two knife sharpeners. One definitely fits in a gadget. I think it's $25 or less. It has two slots. It sits in the knife drawer. And you draw the knife through, and it sets the angle for you. There's two slots, one slot if it's really bad, one slot if it's not so bad. But usually if you're pulling it out, you know your knife's pretty dull, so you go through both slots. Now, the more expensive one, so that's the gadget version. And then there's
Is there a brand name on that one, too, by the way, a brand name?
Here, let me look up our winner. Let's see. Handheld knife.
Because that's one of the cool things I love about what you guys do at America's Test Kitchen. You go through all these things and you test them, hello, part of the name, and you say which one's best for what reason, and there's science involved. It's so cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we don't have any advertising. So, our magazines don't take advertising, our shows are on public television, and so that means we're able to really test stuff and vet it authentically and really be transparent about how we tested it. And tell you what the winners are, because we're not going to make any of our advertisers angry because we don't have any.
Right.
Manual knife sharpener. The winner. Oh, it's Chef Choice.
Da, da, da. Okay. Chef Choice?
It is Chef's Choice.
Okay.
I'll give you the full name. It's, this is expensive. It's more expensive than I thought. It's $49.99.
Ooh.
Yeah, okay.
Now, does that take it out of...
This is important because we really didn't like some of these, which I'm surprised.
Okay.
We had... I got to look into this a bit more. So we really like this one. It's the Chef's Choice Pronto Manual Diamond Hone Asian Knife Sharpener.
More about knife sharpeners with Julia Collin Davidson of America's Test Kitchen. That's next on 720 WGN. Mm-hmm. 11:47. Phil Manekian for Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. Talking with Julia Collin Davidson from America's Test Kitchen about knife sharpeners. Now, Julia, at $49.99, does that take the diamond-honed Asian knife sharpener out of the realm of gadgets?
It's on the edge.
All right.
I did find one of my favorite ones that is $11. It's a knife sharpener.
Now we're talking. Here we go.
It's a classic 20 degrees. I've actually owned this one, and I keep it in the drawer with my knives. And I loved it so much, and I showed my father, who's really into sharpening knives. He actually gave my husband a belt sander to keep the knives sharp.
Nice.
Knife sharpening is his passion. And I pulled out this little $11 tool, and I said, I love this thing. He said, that's been in my fishing tackle box for years. Like, it's a very old-fashioned tool. It's called the AccuSharp.
Wow.
Knife and tool sharpener. It's got one slot. It's plastic with just a 20-degree V. It's $11. It's really basic to use, and, it's that's a good one. On the other end of the spectrum, for $131, there's the Professional Sharpening Station by Chef's Choice. It's bananas good. It is so good. It's electric. It has three slots. It's amazing.
And that's what you use, right?
So, that's what I use.
Yeah.
I have both. I have them all, to tell you the truth.
You get the cool stuff.
I have them all, and, it depends on my mood. Am I going to go to the basement to get the knife sharpener and do a couple knives, or am I just making dinner and need to run it through a couple times so I can cut this onion?
Right.
Like, that's the, you know.
I got it.
That's the question. All right. Yeah. Well, now, tell me about your knives. What's your knife situation?
A funny story. My son worked for Cutco for about a week.
Yeah. A week.
Yeah.
I've used Cutco knives. My dad, he'll try any knife out there.
Cutco knives are really good. They're pretty expensive, but it wasn't quite what he maybe thought as far as an occupation is concerned, you know? Because for those who don't know, you kind of got to get your leads and you call friends and then you got to sell them knives that are, they're really good, but they're really expensive. So it's not quite what he thought of. He was attracted to it because he could work on his own time when he wanted to and do all this stuff by himself. So good for him for trying it, but it didn't work out. But I did.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of those knives personally.
Really?
Yeah, the handles don't suit me and the balance is off.
Okay.
They're sharp, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I'm fussier. I'm 5'2.5". That half is pretty important to me. And so I'm short, right? And that means counters are tall and I do a lot of chopping. So having a knife that fits my hand that makes it easier for me to chop is just easier all the way around.
What kind do you like?
My hand is on the smaller side. So, yeah.
What kind of knives do you like?
Oh, my favorite, I have a custom knife that I had made for me by a dude, George Federer. And he has Federer knives, and he does custom knives. And that's my all-time favorite. I also like, believe it or not, there's a cheap knife out there made by Victorinox. It's got a plastic handle. It has a partial tang. I mean, it is like the epitome of what a cheap knife should be, but I can't kill this thing. Like, it is, if the handle fits good, there's a nonstick handle, they're easy to sharpen. You know, and also because it's not that expensive, I don't baby it like I baby my custom knife, and it just won't go away. I mean, it is.
It's indestructible.
It's awesome. When I really appreciate a piece of equipment that's not expensive but so well built that it just sticks around for the long haul, and I'm tough on things, so that's the Victorinox.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move our attention to grilling. We talked about grilling a little bit before. First of all, with grilling, is what's more important, do you think, technique or execution?
Oh, wow.
Look at me with the questions, huh?
Look at that. That's like philosophical. They're the same thing in my head.
Okay.
So explain to me the difference from your question. Like, can you ask the question a different way?
We mentioned earlier about doing like a tenderloin. Okay.
Yeah. And grilled tenderloin, so good.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. I love it. And what I do is the snake method on a charcoal grill.
Oh, with the charcoal.
Right. So what you do, if you're unfamiliar with it, you've got a Weber grill, a round Weber grill. You set up your coals on the edge around the rim of the circle, right? And you start
it. Two coals wide and two coals high.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And you start it at one end. And it burns for an hour and a half.
Yeah, consistently.
And yeah.
Yep.
And you can cook a turkey that way, too.
Yeah.
You can cook a lot of things that way.
Brisket. Oh, yeah. It is the best way to cook a brisket when you have to go for hours.
Right.
For sure.
Exactly. And there's no fuss. There's no muss. And I was, the first time I did it, I'm like, oh, I don't know about this. I was very, very nervous. And then I did it. And it worked out perfectly. And I use it all the time right now. It's
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gives you a nice even heat. It basically, it's turning your grill into an oven.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a consistent heat. Yeah.
And you don't have to keep stocking it with coals because I'm a charcoal guy. So there you go. There's that.
Yeah.
Now, there's other ones. What kind of brand names, I guess? The Big Green Egg. That's real popular, right?
Super popular. My father is one of those. I've cooked on it a bit. It is, I mean, it gets terrifically hot. Terrifically hot. So you can sear the heck out of anything. And also, it goes low and slow really well because the grill is so well insulated. But the diameter of that sucker is not like a Weber. And so the surface area is a bit different, and it's hard to refill with coals, I think.
Yeah.
So it works really well for some things, but, you know, it's not Yeah, in my opinion, it's not perfect.
Let's go like top shelf, like real expensive. It's the Santa Maria.
Oh.
With the wheel where you can adjust the level of your grill. You got the charcoal.
My goodness. I've never cooked on one of those.
Neither have I.
That's
but I've seen it on shows, and I'm like, oh, I want one of those.
Do you ever watch anything from Francis Mallmann? Do you follow him?
No,
I
don't.
He's like the Argentinian grill master. Oh, you would love him. So he grills everything. He builds these cages that he puts over bonfires, and he hangs meats and vegetables. He's amazing. I think there was a chef's table on him way back.
Okay.
You'd like that. And that's when I start thinking about all these fancy grills, I think about him. He's doing incredible food just over, you know, basically a campfire, you know?
Wow.
That at some point... At some point, it becomes not about the cooking the best food. It's about having fun things, like, you know, just having a nice grill. That could be totally fun to use, and if it's a drop in the bucket for you and it gives you pleasure, sure.
Right.
But now,
talk about technique. They do a thing down there in Argentina where they basically have like a bed of coals, and you hang meat on the side.
I've
been there and I've seen it, and it's unbelievable. That technique is cool.
Yeah, it's self-basting, and it gets all the smoke, and it cooks slowly. That's obviously a very different type of cooking.
Right.
Or grilling, if you'd even call it grilling. But, it's so easy to go down the rabbit hole of grilling gadgets, for sure.
And so,
technique over execution. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think... Your method with the snake is definitely impressive. I've not only really done it for long cooking things. I've never done it for quicker cooking things.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Weber. That is, you know, that is the very often the charcoal grill of choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did have a gas grill out back that was a super spendy one. It was left over from the test kitchen, and I got a hold of it. And this thing was an inferno, right? I burned eyebrows on it. It was just, it went from 0 to 60 in a second. And my husband and I were always complaining that it's too hot, too hot. Well, you know, it finally bit the dust, and we had to go out and get another one. And we bought a really good Weber, but we didn't go into the, you know, the multiple thousands of dollars. And we cooked on it the first time. We're like, wow, I missed the jet fuel. Like, it's just, I miss the heat. You know, it's hard to get things browned.
That's funny.
Your average old gas grill. And this is even, you know, the higher-end Weber gas grill.
Right.
So that's the thing about charcoal is you can get a really good flame and a really good sear.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
We got about a minute left. Julia Collin-Davidson of America's Test Kitchen. When can we see new episodes of America's Test Kitchen with you, our favorite host?
Yeah. Well, new episodes are coming out in January. We actually filmed... this year. We're one of the few shows that got it together and filmed. We didn't film in the studio like we usually do. We actually all filmed in our own home kitchens. We brought one. We all got tested. We got one camera guy. He did the camera. He did the lighting. He did the sound. We all did our own our own prep, our own everything. And so it took a lot longer to film all 26 episodes of the show, but we all did it. And so instead of having me, the host, along with a test cook on camera, it's just one of us on camera cooking in our own homes, but it was awesome. And those episodes will start up in January.
Very cool.
It's called America's Test Kitchen at Home.
Nice. Now, with it being at home, you got an upgrade on your kitchens, I hope, at home, right?
you'd wish. You'd hope. When you have someone coming over to your house, and all of a sudden you see your house through a different light, like things that you kind of needed fixing, but you kind of let go and you got used to it. And then all of a sudden it's fresh again. It was like that. It was like, wow, my kitchen's going to be on TV. I mean, it's time to, you know, put that shade up correctly and, you know, actually get the gunk out of the corner. And, you know, this counter is rotting. Maybe
the
we should replace
things,
it.
Right?
So it was like that. So the kitchen got a little bit of a facelift.
Got it. Julia Collin-Davidson, America's Test Kitchen. Thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, nice talking to you, Phil. Have a great holiday.
Julia, thank you. You as well. Getting the lights up for the holidays, the tree up for Christmas, all the nine yards.